And of course, our guest tonight, Dr. Fred Alan Wolf. We're talking about his work, Time Loops and Space Twists, and we'll be back with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Fred, do you think there are other people on other planets trying to question exactly what we're doing right now? They're thinking, how did this start? Who's God? What's going on here?
Well, there are two possibilities here. Okay, first of all, there's a standard, well, I'll call it the standard possibility. Yes, Matilda, there are people on other planets, because the chances of having just other planets without people seems to be overwhelmingly impossible, considering that on our own planet, under really dire situations, we find life, even though life, as we would normally wish it to be, would seem totally impossible. There's even evidence, for example, that there was life on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me that in the state of evolution, of planetary evolution, that it seems inconceivable to me that life would only develop only on Earth. It just seems improbable to me. So I would say yes. Now here's another answer. This is really far out. And I admit, this is total wacky kind of far out. So I'm going to make a wacky far out.
All right.
What's out there is us. That we're on all those other planets, and what we're looking at when we see the other planets are reflections of ourselves, some from the past, some from the future, some from other parallel universes, but they're all us. In other words, when we actually make contact, we're going to be shocked to find ourselves talking to ourselves. Everything's a mirror.
It may be.
The universe is a kind of a light show.
It may be. So
a magician's trick. And I admit, this is crazy. But it isn't so crazy. One physicist, Leonard Susskind, says that on the surfaces of black holes, information gets collected and shown back out into the universe, and therefore, why us? We're nothing special on that information light show. So we must be, you know, just like a lens could produce multiple images, this information being produced can also be multiple, and we're just looking at ourselves in various phases of time and space.
All right, so here is the $64,000 question. Who made God?
God made God because that's all there was. There is no God other than God. I mean, you know.
That's what my mother said a long time ago,
you know,
Fred.
Allah Akbar. I mean, God is great because there is nothing else. They got that right. There's nothing else. So there is no maker of God because there is nothing to be made. God is in a timeless, spaceless state. So to be made, to be unmade, to be created, to be annihilated, that's part and parcel of space-time matter. That's in the show. That's part of the illusion. But before space-time and matter, there is something that is not space-time or matter. Therefore, the question of who makes what is unanswerable because there's nothing to reference it with. In order for me to say, where am I? I have to say, with respect to what? So if I ask, who made God, with respect to when?
Yeah. My mother once said, Fred, always was, always will be.
Exactly.
I wanted a better answer than that, though, from her.
Well, I don't know. I don't think there is I don't think one can give an answer to that question, because when we frame questions using language, we frame them based upon language structure, which has within its own codification past, present, and future. I was, I will be, I am. I have, I had, I will have. These are all based upon the structures of language, and they're all temporally based. Time is a huge part of language. Without time, we couldn't even speak to each other and make any sense, because we have a sense of time out of which we reference all of our languages and all of our words. But when you're talking about God, you're beyond space, time, and matter, so you can't use ordinary language.
Interesting take. It really is.
Oh, it's mind-boggling. Really Twilight Zone stuff.
So when people who are really religious, not spiritual, but really religious, get involved with this, they go to the other extreme, where it's not science at all. It's all, you know, God did this, and, you know, he has created this. He can end it. He has done it. Do you agree with that?
No, because we're playing a part in it. And, I mean, since everybody is God, we're all playing a part. We're all doing what is going on in the God Light Show. So we're all part of it. No, I don't believe that, and I don't think that even makes any sense. In fact, people write to me, and they have their own spiritual belief systems in which they're mainly dogmatic religious doctrine that they've bought into, and they really believe that what they bought into is the truth, and there's nothing going to shake them from that. They want to open up beyond that. In fact, that it was dogma that created Lutheran's religious break with the Catholic Church, because he said, look, you guys are corrupt. The Catholic Church is corrupt right now. You're selling dispensation. You're telling people that you can get them out of that space which is between heaven and hell, that space called the netherworld or whatever that's it's called in the language of the Catholic religion. I don't remember what they call it anymore. But by paying money, you can get your ancestors or so forth to move out of a purgatory. That's it. They call it purgatory. So there's always been, I mean, religion, when it grabs hold, because it's dogmatic, it becomes has almost a dictatorial power. I'm not saying religion is bad. I'm saying that you got to think, you got to feel, you got to intuit, you got to sense, you got to have your heart open, but you don't necessarily have to believe that the guy standing in front of you has any better truth than you have yourself.
Good point. In the past, people would categorize religion in their own little ways. And now I think a lot of people are changing. Case in point, there's a group out there that thinks it's going to come to an end on May 21st. Judgment Day, it's all over. It's done. The chosen ones will be taken, and off we go. I interviewed them, Fred. I tried to get them to come down and say they're going to be on the show. That the 21st of May, by the way, is a Saturday. So I wanted them to be on the show Monday the 23rd. They refused because they said they weren't going to be around. These people, they wouldn't budge. They will not budge. So when that date comes, and they've been wrong on two other dates in the past, I suspect that they'll come up with another date.
Oh, yeah, they'll rationalize it. No, there are those guys that Doe and T, or those crazy nuts that killed themselves and ascended to, you know, ascended to one of the, I don't know, what are they, a comet or something like that? I mean,
Hale-Bopp. Yeah.
What?
The Hale-Bopp comet. Yep.
The Hale-Bopp comet. Yeah, I mean that was really wacky. But I mean, to me, that's carrying it too far. I mean, that's allowing zeal to overcome rational thought. And God has not intended you to be zealous over your rational mind. He's not intended your rational mind to dissipate your spiritual belief systems, but he's certainly not intended the other way around. So you can't give up thinking. You can't give up educating. You can't give up learning about the true magic and beauty of this universe. And by simply accepting what somebody tells you as being true, rather than experiencing for yourself and opening your mind for a better experience of what's going on, it's like blinding yourself. It's putting daggers in your eyes and cotton in your ears and putting senseless stuff around your skin so that you can't feel, you can't hear, you can't see. You become deaf, dumb, and blind. You become the opera Tommy.
What is the purpose of living, in your opinion? Why are we here?
The purpose of living is in my mind, it's because God wants to have this experience. This is God's desire. We are a part of this desire. We all sense the desire to have life. And that, I think, is very much a part of the way, you might say, we want it.
Is it a learning?
We don't want to be all one.
Is it a learning curve? Is that why we're here?
What's that?
Are we here because it's a learning curve?
No, we already know it. It's what I would call a forgetting. It's the great forgetfulness and then the relearning to get back to where we came from. But we're going to keep going through these cycles for as long as we desire them. As soon as we stop desiring these kinds of cycles, these kinds of dreams, the dream will change. But it's really us. We're doing it. And it's very hard. I mean, it's very hard for people to understand that they're creating their own reality. But that's what everybody's doing. We're part of the dream. And, you know, like when you're in a dream, if you ever had a lucid dream, you may notice that you can create your reality in a lucid dream.
That's right.
The same thing is going on in a waking life. It's just a more complex type of dream involving the whole God mind rather than your individual mind like you would have in your individual dream, lucid dream life. But it's the same basic thing. So what we're doing is basically forgetting who we really are and then remembering who we really are to have the experience of remembering who we are, because it's delightful to remember who we really are once having forgotten it.
Why not let us live physically forever? Why do we even have to die?
The problem is that it's a quantum mechanical world. And quantum mechanics is not a game of certain days. It's a game of probabilities. And because it's probabilities, because that maximizes the possibilities for learning and grasping and moving forward, life has to come as individual experiences in single bodies has to end. Because if you look at the DNA structures, if you look at the structures of our cellular tissue, errors are continuing to propagate in time to make new possibilities take place. At the same time, there's steady deterioration. And that's all part of the process. So living forever, although that may sound wonderful, would become tedious and boring. And remember what God's original dream is. I don't want to be bored anymore.
He doesn't want to be bored.
I want to have the adventure. I want this. I'm addicted to this kind of thing. I want to have this feeling. I want to dance. I want to feel. I want to make love. I want to have these experiences.
And he can only do that through us.
That's what?
He can only do that through us.
Only by being human. Or animal. I mean, by being alive.
Yeah.
Being alive.
What about the angelic realm? Does it exist?
It exists as images of possibilities so that we can aspire to make up stories thereof. They're kind of part of the imaginal realm. And whether the imaginal realm is an existing thing like the material realm is, that gets into a whole other subject. And I really haven't gotten into that other than through dreams. So you might say the angelic realm might be a realm of dreams, but I don't really even think that's what it is. I think when I've had these lucid dream states that I go into other worlds, they're worlds that look pretty much like this world that we're in now, but they're not the same worlds. I've had lucid dream states where people were skiing down mountains, but they weren't skiing on skis. They were like flying down the mountains as if they were skiing on airstreams.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've had this kind of a dream. And, of course, I've had dreams of flying and doing things that, you know, people say, well, it's just, you know, an illusion. It's a hallucination. People dismiss these kind. I don't think so. They're lucid. When I mean lucid, I mean I'm having my senses awakened and I'm in control of what's going on. I've had other kinds of dreams, too, with their stories being told. They're remarkable. Really stories. Things happening, people talking to me, or things going on, events. And I wake up from them and I can remember them. Not all the time. Not all my dreams are worth talking about. But when they are, they become very eventful. I don't think these are angelic realms. I think these are realms of other existences, or even realms of myself in my parallel realities.
So I'm beginning to think, though, that biblically speaking, that maybe that's the way it is, too. Maybe those words in the Bible truly are accurate, Fred, and, you know, maybe subject to interpretation, but that a little bit of that and a little bit of quantum physics, maybe there's a mixture there.
I think there is. I think there is. And as I said, I've written about this in several of my books, Mind into Matter, Matter into Feeling,
right.
The Spiritual Universe, and now the Time Loops book. There's a bit of that in there. There's probably more of the physics kind of stuff in the Time Loops book, but there's more of the Kabbalistic thinking and the meaning of the Hebrew letters and stuff like that in the other books, like Mind into Matter. So if people want to get more into that, there's other stuff that they can get into. I also have audio courses that you can listen to from Sounds True that you might find of interest, too.
When you talk about time loops, what does that mean?
Well, that's the most interesting part, in a way. It's a hint that time isn't only a one-way street. The reason that they became interesting is because a time loop is composed of a particle, which now has been emerged by banging into the Higgs field, so it's now more or less got mass, mm-hmm. like an electron, for example, and it's banging around, it's moving, and it reaches a certain place where it interacts with an energy field of some kind, any energy field at all, usually something more powerful, like maybe a nuclear energy field or something else even, and it turns around in time and goes backward in time until it reaches the place where it started, where it first got created, and then it follows and goes into a loop. And if you look at both sides of that loop, first of all, the loop which is going from where it started to where it ends, that's like an electron. Where it goes backward in time, it's still an electron, but since it's going backward in time to make the loop, it doesn't look like that to us because we move forward in time. So something going backward in time, let's say it goes from time 6 o'clock to time 5 o'clock. Well, we don't go from time 6 o'clock to time 5 o'clock. We go from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So what it'll look like to us is something going forward in time in the opposite direction. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm with you.
That we call a positron or antimatter. So the whole thing that's to remind us and why the time loops are necessary is they are there to remind us that the Higgs field itself acts creatively and destructively. It can create and annihilate. And by creating, it creates a positron and electron. That's the beginning of the loop. By annihilating, it annihilates the electron and positron. That's the end of the loop. But we see it as a total loop. Now, these loops exist throughout the whole universe. In fact, everything that travels eventually makes these kinds of loops. There are quark loops. There are electron loops. For every particle you can think of, there are these virtual loops which come into being. And what they do is they set a stage. They provide a background, a dynamic background in which annihilation and creation processes, as we experience them through one-way street along time, provide us with a sense of life and death.
Fred, we're going to come back with you in a moment. Let's talk about time travel. And also, I still got to ask you about that Big Bang when we come right back. With our special guest tonight, Dr. Fred Allen Wolf, we're talking about his latest work, Time Loops and Space Twists. We'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Fred, will physical time travel be possible if we can harness some of these things that you've been talking about?
It's certainly theoretically possible. It's not outside of the realm of our current understanding of the theory that involves space, time, and matter. It's within that. Specifically, there are two different kinds of time travel that we can talk about. One is the normal kind, like you see in the movies. Goes back to the future and meets his mom and pop before they had him, so to speak. That kind of, you know, silliness in the movies, which is a lot of fun. That's physical time travel. In order to do that, you would have to be able to create a kind of time machine. And that time machine would consist of really a wormhole, which is a black hole with two ends, so to speak, which has been separated and pulled apart. By the way, if you want to read more about this, you can read a book by Kip Thorne from Caltech, who wrote a book about this kind of wormhole. You can also read my book, Yoga of Time Travel, which explains in detail with pictures just how you would do this kind of time machine. And you could then separate the two ends, the two parts of the wormhole, and put them one in the future and one would actually be in the past. And you could loop. You could go from one to the other. Even though as time went on and both ends of the wormhole would be moving through time, you could still go back to a relative past or relative future, but you would have to build one of those things. And the problem is wormholes are unstable. They tend to squeeze together because there are nothing on the inside and vacuums suck. So they would suck it closed. So they have negative pressure. So you would have to put in some kind of something that would hold it open. And I think Kip Thorne came up with the idea of something called exotic matter, which we don't know what that even is. But it would be something which would have positive pressure and would keep the hole from collapsing in on itself. It's possible that dark energy in the universe may have this property. You know, there's two kinds of dark stuff in the universe. There's dark matter and there's dark energy. And the dark matter is what keeps the galaxies from flying apart because there's not enough matter to keep them moving like they're moving. And there's dark energy, which keeps the universe moving apart, accelerating as it goes. So dark energy would be a kind of repulsive kind of an effect, and dark matter would be kind of a negative, attractive kind of effect. So we'd have to have some way to capture dark energy to keep these wormholes open. It's not impossible. We could ever figure out just exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about dark matter and dark energy. We might be able to build one of these things.
All right. When you have talked about the Big Bang, earlier again, we talked about nothingness, which is difficult for me to comprehend, but if there was a Big Bang in nothingness, how the heck did that happen?
That's a good question. We're playing with that. Roger Penrose has the notion that there wasn't just one Big Bang. There's been bangs going on ad infinitum from the beginning of something, which is not time. So there's been a lot of bangs. Bang, crunch, bang, crunch, bang, crunch, or that the ending of the universe is just the start of another one. There's the whole idea that the universe expands and then crunches. There's that kind of picture. Right now, it doesn't seem to be the case because the universe seems to be accelerating in its expansion. But we're not really quite sure what's going on there. But anyway, what caused that to happen is, I don't know. Ask anybody. We don't know. How did it start? I haven't got any idea. I mean, we can say, you know, God did it, but, you know, that doesn't really answer it from a physicist's point of view. Something about the nature of vacuum. Here's what we do know. Nothing is unstable. That is, empty space itself has a tendency to bubble and produce matter and antimatter, time loops. Space-time vacuum itself makes time loops. They just bubble in, bubble out, bubble in, bubble out, bubble in, bubble. That's called, we can feel the effect of that. It's called vacuum polarization. We can see it happening, but it's part of the vacuum itself. The vacuum itself is not just sitting there with its not doing anything. It's bubbling, bubbly, bubbling, bubbly, bubbly, bubble, 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 toil and trouble, like Macbeth's witches. It's constantly bubbling and making matter and antimatter time loops throughout everywhere. This seems to be, maybe that's what the universe did when it first started. There might have been a giant bubble. And then the question is, what happened to the antimatter?
Exactly. Where'd it go? And with an understanding,
there's a what's called a break in the symmetry here. And that broken symmetry may have trapped matter, and so that there was slightly more matter than antimatter. That was, there was more electrons going forward in time than going backward in time. And why that happened, we don't know.
With an understanding in all of this, what does that do to somebody's life? How can they use this to make their own existence a little better?
Well, the first and the most important thing is to realize that all this creation and annihilation, all these activities are going on inside of you, which means that you can't help but have new ideas, new feelings, new experiences. You can't help it. It's going to happen. So life is continually going to be exciting for you once you begin to recognize that that's where your life really abounds. It's there. It's right there. It's going on inside of you. The Big Bang is going on right inside of you right now. So once you begin to recognize that and sense it, you will sense it. You begin to realize that anything that you say that stabilizes you, saying, I am that, or I am this, or I can't do that, or I won't do this, are simply statements of you asserting control over this process. But they're not statements of fact. They're not statements which actually tell you who and what you are. You really cannot say who and what you are because it's continually changing by all these processes. So what it does is it gives you a kind of a bubbling self-confidence. It bubbles into your makeup of your life, and you realize, you know, I can be anything I want to be. There's nothing holding me back. Why did I think I wasn't capable of doing that? And the answer is only your thought was keeping you from holding you back. And once your thought becomes part of your regime of life, it forms a kind of a, I would call it a rut, like a, you know, like an alley when you go bowling, those little side ruts on the sides of a, where you throw the bowling ball down. What are those things called?
The gutter. The old gutter. Yeah, I hit that many times.
So what you're doing when you're creating thoughts, I can't do this, I won't do that, I'm not going to do that, you're creating gutters in your consciousness. And what happens is that that's your creation. So the mind reinforces your creation over and over again. I know people who have created a situation which something they tasted as a child, they've never forgotten, and so they'll never eat that again because it tasted terrible when they were a baby.
Well,
so
or
not touch that stuff ever again.
It's like working in a pizza shop. You get tired of it, so you won't. You won't eat pizza if you work there.
Yeah. Well, that's the, you just get over and over. You create these gutters in your consciousness, and your ball, every time you throw your ball, it's just right in the gutter. You can't throw a strike because you're not trying something new. You're simply throwing gutter balls.
Good point. Let's take a few calls here, Fred, before next hour. Derek in Long Island, New York. You're on with Dr. Fred Allen Wolf.
Yeah. Good morning, Fred, and good morning, George.
Hi, Derek.
George, it's a great guest. This is one of the best shows I've heard. Fred, where are you located?
San Francisco.
That's too far for us to get together for lunch. But at any rate, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. The first was about ego, and the second was, have you read any of? I've never heard anybody speak on George's program that has been so close to what I understand the truth to be. And have you ever read anything approaching this thing from a philosophical viewpoint instead of a scientific viewpoint? In other words,
Well, whose philosophy are you referring to? The
Have you ever read any of the books by Belzikar, Consciousness Speaks, or any of those?
What's the guy's name again?
His name is Ramesh Belzikar.
No, I haven't read him.
You've got to pick up that
No,
book.
I haven't. I'm sorry to say I do not know this person.
Just remember that. Consciousness Speaks. He was an understudy of Nisargadatta.
Okay.
But he puts
you can always drop me a line by... I have a Facebook page, a Twitter page, and I have email, fred@fredallenwolf.com. So you can always drop me a line by email. And
Fred,
I'm
a dinosaur. I don't use cell phones, computers, or
iPads.
You're a rarity, though, Derek.
Kind of guys. Okay, I gotcha.
You're a rarity. You're using the new social networking now, Fred, too. It's incredible, isn't it?
It's interesting. I don't know if it's incredible yet, but it's certainly interesting. I'm making contacts with people that I didn't think I could.
It gets
so
it gets the word
I'm very happy
out.
That it's going on, and I'm looking forward to getting involved more. That I feel more like you, Derek. I don't want to do that stuff. I just want to do my own thing, get in my own gutters. I don't want to throw strikes anymore. I want to throw gutter balls. And I finally gave up on throwing gutter balls and said, I'm going to get to Facebook and Twitter and Derek, get a computer.
Fred, where do you see the next major breakthrough in science or in what we're talking about, some metaphysical things?
I'll tell you what it is. Everything I'm telling you right now about the mind of God is speculation. I can't tell you it's scientifically proven yet, but I want to tell you that I've been about 20 years ahead in these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
About 1975, a couple of us, Jack Trafratti, Bob Tobin, and I wrote a book called Space, Time, and Beyond, in which we talked about time travel and quantum entanglement and gravity field. We talked about all the stuff that at that time was considered to be wacko, craziness. And now that the 90s and now we're into the next millennium, all that's now being published in the rigid journals of physical theory. All the wackiness is now standard stuff. So taking that as a hint, I'm suggesting that the next frontier of physical inquiry will be the nature of mind and understanding this thing about the Higgs field as being literally the mind of God. And that's going to be where we're going. That's what we're headed for, and that's going to take some more discoveries, some more ideas, some more understanding of things about things going faster than light, what I call tachyons. That's going to be part of the language of this new way of thinking, and we're going to be able to understand that a little bit better. Right now, it's still there. It's mathematical. There was a theory, but it's speculative.
Well, there was a point, and still most scientists do, they think that when you deal with the brain, you're dealing with the mind, and
yes.
I'm not sure that's the case anymore. I think that...
Well, what I used to do is say, well, brain is a noun, mind is a verb.
Yep.
Mind and time are very intimately related. Brain and space are very intimately related. Brains exist in space. Mind exists in time.
Good point. Next up, Abilene, Texas, Joe, east of the Rockies. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Oh, this could be real fun. Thank you. And Fred, the name of the creator, there's a big hint there. We keep getting tied up with God and the translation of I am as an intransitive. The word Yahweh is a future causative hip hill form of the verb, meaning I have created, I am creating, I will create. It's a continuum of explosive creation. Hence, it's accelerating outward, and isn't that the concept of creation we have now? And the clue is in the name itself.
Okay.
In 8:7 of Romans, Paul is giving us a hint, and he says, the carnal mind, that Darwinian thing between our ears, is not subject to the Torah, nor indeed can it be. It won't program what we're trying to find. We're struggling down here in the engine room, trying to get up to the command post here and look out through the windscreen to find out where we're going. And so rather than using the knowledge and wisdom, which is available to everyone from all kinds of education, asking for, which is a gift of the Holy Spirit, understanding, which is his mind, which is a gift, and it's thereby laying aside by meditation or some of the concepts you've been talking about, laying these aside and asking for understanding, which is asking to see things through his eyes. It's a gift. And so this mind, this universal mind, this thing of this, the Yahweh Spirit, is a gift given, and I've experienced it a couple of times, and it's amazing how you can get beyond education and get away from the intellect of the carnal mind into the intelligence of the human spirit. I'd like to get your comments on it.
Well, I would say these are your ways of dealing with your experiences, and they're perfectly rational to me, what you're doing. I wouldn't see them the same way you do, but I understand where you're coming from. So for me, the scientific or rational is very much integrated into my way of thinking. Rather than saying I don't want the intellect to get in the way of my experience of Yahweh. By the way, in Kabbalah, Yahweh is Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Yod is the Hebrew 10th Hebrew letter, and it stands for that which has come into existence. Hey is the 5th Hebrew letter, and it stands for breath of life. So existence breathes life. Then we have Vav, and Vav is the 6th Hebrew letter, and that stands for fertilization, propagation, communication. And then we have another hay, another breath of life. So what we have is existence, breathing life, fertilizing more life. So Yahweh is the principle of existence, giving life to fertilize more life. On the other hand, Elohim, or Allah, or Elo, is Aleph Lamed Faith. The Aleph Lamed is Allah, and that is a different principle altogether. That is much more deeper in its existence. It's a more primal level dealing with Aleph. A lot of the sacred letters, sacred words from Kabbalah all begin with Aleph. For example, the Hebrew for man is Esh, and for woman it's Esha. And Esh is Aleph Sheen, which means the spirit Aleph. Sheen is the cosmic movement. So the spirit cosmically moving is what we call man.
Fred, when we come back, we're going to take full phone calls next hour with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, I want to ask you if the universe will ever end.